Europe's $800 billion coronavirus stimulus may never see the light of day. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Hungary and Poland have said they'll block approval of the EU's budget over a clause that ties funding with adherence to the rule of law in the bloc. The EU is investigating both countries for undermining the independence of courts, media, and non-governmental organizations. Back in July, though, through a qualified majority, EU states agreed the $888 billion budget and support package, but final approval to enact it requires unanimous support. The BBC's Gavin Lee explains what happens now.
On Thursday, there's meant to be an EU summit that's supposed to be talking about how on earth 27 member states get money by January the 1st, because this is when the budget is supposed to kick in. Nothing will happen at this stage. The entire fund is in jeopardy.
These funds are really needed throughout Europe where second lockdowns are already in place. Is there any way to get this funding over the line? Will the EU have to offer Poland and Hungary some kind of incentive to back this plan?
A couple of options. One is they try to make it softer, the conditionality, to say that there are certain areas that we will look at, but we will be able to give funding. Maybe that works, but already you've had MEPs saying it's too soft already. Do they take it off the table? It doesn't look like it either. Emmanuel Macron's been very strong on that. Do they try and get the coronavirus funding outside of the budget? Yeah, but it could take a long time. It's difficult to see a way out, but for some reason, fudge is the magic word within the EU. They often find a way.
Gavin Lee for us in Brussels. Thanks for your time.
All the best.
Checking the numbers now, global shares are taking a pause after the latest vaccine-induced rally. Key benchmarks across Europe are little changed. Asian shares ended slightly higher. Brent crude is up 1%. Huawei said today it's selling off its budget phone brand called Honor to a domestic consortium due to what it calls tremendous pressure from U.S. sanctions. The BBC's Karishma Vaswani has more on that.
The decision to sell the Honor budget smartphone business will be a big blow to Huawei, which has gone from being a cheap copier of Western phones to one of the biggest smartphone makers in the world. This move comes after the U.S. restricted supplies to Huawei, alleging it's a national security threat, allegations the company denies. No amount was announced for the sale, which will now result in a new company called Shenzhen Xijin New Information Technology. Huawei will not hold any shares in the new company.
The BBC's Karishma Vaswani there. Okay, so if you're like me, you spent most of your Sunday devouring the fourth season of The Crown. Yes, there's drama, but there's also fashion. And this season features some of the most iconic modern-day royal looks, including, who could forget, Princess Diana's 1981 wedding gown. In the decades since the Princess of Wales first used her clothing to communicate with the public, the business of royal fashion has boomed. And the key players in the 21st century are bloggers, who within minutes can identify brands a royal wears and send those items flying off virtual shelves. Elizabeth Holmes is a veteran fashion journalist and author of the new book, HRH, So Many Thoughts on Royal Style. She told me how it all works.
They're real sleuths. In the minute Kate or Meghan step out, they get to work and try and identify what they're wearing and try and offer up a link to it. Oftentimes that is an affiliate link, so they can get either a percentage of the sale of that item. They offer up more affordable alternatives. With Kate, they're called replicates.
I don't think you can mention the royal family and fashion without thinking of Princess Diana. Her fashion had staying power.
On this final night of the tour, the princess was wearing a suitably dreamy creation of pale pink velvet with a low back line.
And this year, two iconic sweaters have gone on sale of hers, and they carry hefty price tags. They're about $300 each. How are we 20, 25 years later, and these designs are still very relevant, something people want to own?
I think it speaks to the power of Diana's fashion and how much a part it is of her legacy. What she did was infuse emotion into the equation. And, you know, you can see that in these sweaters that have been remade now. You know, one of them is the infamous black sheep sweater with white sheep and a single black one. And she wore it twice to Charles's polo matches. And it immediately sent this very cheeky message. And Diana understood not just sort of the language of clothing, but the emotion behind it.
There's so much focus on what these royal women wear, but what about the men? Do they dress for purpose and messaging too?
You know, I think they do. I mean, we can have a much bigger conversation, and I think it's about time, about why society as a whole focuses so much on what women wear. That said, I think that the men and you're seeing this, I think, increasingly with Prince William, they recognize the conversation and they are dabbling in it.
As arrivals go for an evening reception, you'd have to say this one was pretty neat. A rickshaw for a couple of royals. And when they got out...
Yeah, when he stepped out of the rickshaw in Pakistan and he was wearing an emerald green traditional dress, people went nuts.
He wore a Pakistani knee-length sherwani. For once, it was what William wore, not Kate, that had everyone talking.
And what's important to understand about royal fashion is it's a real opportunity for the royal family, right? Because they give speeches, but they don't divulge a bunch of personal information. They don't tend to give big revealing interviews. What they do is they show up, and photographs of those appearances go around the world in seconds. And like it or not, the first thing that we all see is what they're wearing. And if we like it, then maybe we'll read the caption that goes with the photograph. And it opens the door to learn more about their charitable pursuits, about the events they're attending, about the causes they're supporting. And so when you have a fashion moment in there and it gets a lot of play, that brings more attention to their work. And I think they want that.
It's fascinating stuff. Elizabeth Holmes, author of the new book, HRH, So Many Thoughts on Royal Style. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, if you want more royal fashion, a director's cut of that chat with Elizabeth is over on marketplace.org. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.